away, come and play with me.
Everything is gonna be.
I want you to play for me.
Everything is gonna be.
In everything
is gonna be.
It's gonna be alright.
Everything is gonna be.
I don't care what the problem.
Everything is gonna be.
I know that he can cut me some.
All right. Keep your head up. Hey, that is Danny Tisdale. Oh, my. Welcome, everyone. This is the Boomerang Radio Show, coming to you every Sunday at 3 p.m. on the West Coast, 6 p.m. on the East, and 5 Central. And I see my main man always there, consistent, reliable, as with all of our hosts here on the Boomerang Radio Show. Today, Danny Tisdale should be joining us, Dr. Demery. Tuesday is Ann's birthday, so she's celebrating all week starting today. She had a show yesterday, which was absolutely amazing. And Dr. Joyce Harris, keep her in prayers. She's still taking care of her daughter. And Dr. Sims, she's under the weather. She's under the weather, so pray for her as well. But Dr. Demery, this reminds me of days when it was just you and I, brother.
Yes, sir.
That's all right. Yeah, the show goes on. All right. And I appreciate you for always being there.
I consider it a privilege just to be here.
Well, it's a privilege having you. I believe that. You know, last week we, our show, centered around, as a matter of fact, we focused on, Black American inventors that changed the world. This week was supposed to be part two of that. But in light of recent events over the past week, I thought it was important for us to talk about what's happening with this nation, with this country, and also something historical happened as well. The world knows now, and that had to do with the FBI search at Mar-a-Lago. And I am not going to call it a raid. Now, you have some nefarious groups that's calling it a raid. Oh, my God, you raided an ex-president. Oh, God. Like it was, in other words, that implies that he was caught off guard. He had no warning about this thing that happening. But he had plenty of warning. They were asking nicely in the very beginning. He took several boxes from the White House that never have been taken in the first place. So let's stop right there. You have a lot of people on the right that's telling you, oh, no, how are you going to do that? They were ignoring the fact that this is a federal crime to remove documents, not only sensitive and top secret documents, but you aren't supposed to take documents from the White House. You're not supposed to do that. So we can stop right there with all of this craziness that's going on, Dr. Demery. And I'm going to let you chime in a little in just a second here. But you got, I wish Ann was on the show today because I want to see if there's a legal precedent for some of these politicians are doing right now. If there's a legal precedent because they are stirring up the pot. They are causing controversy. There are people out there now that's talking about killing FBI officials, FBI officers, But let's go back to my original point. He never was supposed to remove those documents in the first place, classified or not. They gave him over a year to return the documents. He returned some in February and had marked those classified and said, hey, okay, that's it. That you got everything that, you know, you asked for. But it wasn't it. It wasn't it at all. There were several more documents and boxes of documents that were still at Mar-a-Lago in an unsecured location. Folks, we're talking about 11 sets of documents that were classified sensitive, top secret, SCI. I forgot what that means. Dr. Demery, I want you to chime in on all of this, right? Hey, Brother Tisdale, thank you so much, man. How are you?
How are you, Brother
Don? Oh, we're doing great, man. Just before you came on, I was playing one of your songs, man. Keep your head up.
Oh, yeah. You just keep up. Sometimes it gets a little hard to do so.
Right.
Misunderstanding, miscommunication, miss whatever.
Look.
But keep your head up.
And if we needed that at any time, we need to do that now.
You got that right.
Man, tell me. So, and this is, I'm going to go to Dr. Demery first, then we'll come to you, Brother Tisdale here. So, people are losing, you know, all of this uproar about you raiding an ex-president. You are going into his home, taking documents out. And they forget the fact he was never supposed to remove them in the first place. Now, when they were nice enough to ask for him, can you please return those documents? You know, he gave him something. He gave him a few boxes and said, okay. Well, there were 15 boxes he gave them back in February and said, okay. And thought that was going to satisfy the whole thing, right? But then you had all of these other documents left, boxes of documents. And there's been reports that, well, they came in last week and they removed 12. But then I've heard reports that it's been upwards of 20. I don't know which is fact. So let's go with 12, if that's it. Okay. All right. I think it's more. It's been reported more on some other outlets. But let's go with 12. If it were only 12... 11 of those boxes were classified sensitive, top secret SEI, and so forth. Now, let's go to the top. Top secret SCI. And Dr. Demery, I forgot what that acronym means. Perhaps you know what that means. I know it's sensitive something. Information. I forgot what the C means, right?
Well, if I remember right, it's like a level above top secret.
It is.
So there's top secret, and then there's a level above top secret. And I think that's what it is, because it's sensitive material dealing with, like, for example, nuclear weapons and specific information dealing with heads of state and whatnot. If I remember right, I could be incorrect, but I'm pretty sure.
You're on point there. There are three levels to top secret. Okay. But what you just mentioned right now is the highest level, which could include nuclear secrets, meaning that if someone like Russia or China or, let's say Saudi Arabia, who is just itching to be a major, major nuclear powerhouse. Now, think about today. I'm going to come back to Saudi Arabia, Brother Tisdale. Saudi, keep that in mind. Saudi Arabia. I mean, they're just itching to become a major, major nuclear powerhouse. Okay. Let me say this. Recently, Trump hosted the Live Tour. Okay. And his resort up there, up in New Jersey, I believe, the Live Golf Tour. Okay, folks, if you're not into golf or you're not paying any attention, you know, because you got busy lives and things of that nature, the Live Golf Tour is sponsored, financed, bankrolled, whatever you want to call it, by guess who? Saudi Arabia. Let's make the connection again. I don't know whether this is factual or not, but it's something that I just thought about. Saudi Arabia wants to be a nuclear powerhouse. Trump has documents that Saudi Arabia really, really wants. And every major company, especially with those that are nefarious in nature, they want those documents. Okay? Saudi Arabia bankrolls this little golf tour. Okay? Now, let me tell you how much money is in that. They offered Tiger Woods $800 million to be part of that. $800 million. Just $200 million shy of $1 billion. Tiger Woods said, no, I don't want any part of that. However, they gave Phil Mickelson upwards of $200 million. Greg Norman, a lot of those pros that were with the PGA, they got, I mean, triple digits in, I mean, millions for leaving the PGA, okay, and going to the LIV golf tournaments, okay? So, Danny, you know, nobody, I haven't heard anybody on any news networks, any, making the connection between the LIV golf tour and Trump holding those documents in Mar-a-Lago. If there's a connection, I don't know. However, it seems mighty strange to me that he would take these documents in the first place. Some of these documents may hold, and what does hold, nuclear secrets that the United States has, and also things about infrastructure, strategies, things that these companies or these countries really want to get their hands on. Danny, I really want your take on this.
As much of a take as I can give on anything of that nature, we get a lot of it via the news, cable news, podcasts, or whatever. I have no control but my opinion about it. Whatever documentation that was desired, I would imagine has already been given. Because the man who had them has no morality in his bones, nowhere. He will do whatever it takes for him. And I believe if he had such critical documentation, whatever is done with it was already done way before they got him back.
Mm-hmm. You know what? That point is well taken, because look how long he's had those documents, Dr. Demery. He's had those documents for well over a year. And it was suggested on some of the major news outlets that, and the question was raised, did he sell them? Now, Dr. Demery, question, do you think that Trump would, oh my God, do you think that he would sell sensitive documents to a foreign adversary? Do you think that's a dumb question, isn't it? Dr. Demery, what's your take? It's really not funny. Go on.
I have said this before, and I'll say it again. 2 points. One, the man is a nefarious prevaricator, meaning the only way you know that Trump is lying is when he's talking. So
that's right.
I put anything past him. Nothing that he does surprises me. He's the shepherd of the devil. He is out for his own, accolades, and I don't think that he cares who or what or whom he steps on to, get what he wants.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be a shame after he took oath of office to, protect this nation and then end up selling secret documents. I wouldn't put anything past him. He's a moron. And it's a shame. I was talking to somebody today. I was saying that we have to get out and vote for many, many, many reasons. One, our ancestors got shot with water hoses, bit by dogs, cursed and damned and spit on. How dare you sit back and not vote? Saying, well, it's inconvenient. I can't get down there. And this, if you get anybody. You call somebody up, come and take me down, because your vote matters. Because we cannot let that idiot back in the White House for another 4 years. He darn near destroyed the country in 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
If we for another 4 years, this country will go into chaos. We'll be a third world country.
Absolutely. Danny, you smiling. What you got to say, bro?
I'm in total agreement. We already at pretty much been doing third world activities within our own homeland.
That's right.
And all of this insignificant killing and different things that are going on because of a supremacist mindset that exists in this country that everybody wants to ignore and say it doesn't exist. It does exist.
It does. You know, and not only does it exist, it is prevalent. Yeah, you're exactly right. And you know, it was a time when they hid behind the sheets. You know, they had hoods on and sheets.
They probably still do that now so they can hide and not be identified.
Yeah.
But they just didn't do it on January 6th.
Yeah, you know, man, look, I'm telling you, we've got some of them, right?
You still might as well have another sheet, because look how the judicial system is dealing with it and how slow and how long it's taken them to do what's needed. Mm-hmm. There are so many things that don't make sense. Breonna Taylor, they finally come to a decision about what they're going to do about her killing. Well, look how many years have gone by.
That's right.
Does that make sense?
No. Absolutely not, man. And Danny, I'm feeling your frustration because I'm frustrated. Dr. Demery knows. And Danny, I tell you, right after that guy was elected back there in 2016, 2017, I told, and Ann teases me, I said, I'm depressed. She said, no, you're not depressed. You're just mad. And I was, man. And it was because I knew at that time that this isn't right. Anybody like that, you know, just like after that Hollywood tape came out about him grabbing women, you know, by the genitals. And I'm thinking, I said, wait a minute, hold it. How in the world could you want to elect somebody like, I said, nope. I said, there's no way in the world that he's going to ever be president. No, nobody's going to elect him. It can't happen. It's absolutely impossible.
Danny, Brother William was so down, he couldn't get out of bed for 3 days. Make sure he's all right.
I said no.
Bad shape.
Well, William, what you must understand, and we can go to something more positive to talk about. I like to just introduce to you from slave to bank owner. Let me read something that's positive, because we get enough of what you're concerning with right now on daily news. Would you not say?
Yeah, go on.
Reverend William Washington Brown established the bank to serve the financial interests of black depositors. He wanted a bank that would serve to protect the finances of black clients, to ensure their finances could not be monitored by whites. The name of the bank came from the Grand Fountain United Order of True Reformers, a black fraternal organization established by Brown in 1849. Racial tensions remained high after the Civil War, so Brown established the first black-owned bank in Richmond, Virginia,
mm-hmm.
which initially operated out of his home. 2 years later, the bank moved to its location several blocks away at 604-608 North 2nd Street. Thrived despite the economic depressions. The bank did very well. When the U.S. economic depression of 1893 hit and people were panicking and rushing to the bank to withdraw their monies, Brown's bank was one of the few that survived. In fact, it was the only bank in Richmond that was able to pay out the full value of its customers' account and remain in full operation. Listen, after Brown's death in 1897, the bank continued in operation. It also expanded into other areas such as newspapers and real estate, a retirement home, and a building and loans association. Its growth included operations in 24 states. And the last little part, the downfall was this. However, under the new president, Reverend William Lee Taylor, The bank was mismanaged, often making unsecured loans that defaulted. The straw that broke the camel's back was the bank embezzlement of $50,000 by the bank's cashiers. By 1910, the State Corporation Commission ordered the bank closed, but it remains in history as the first bank owned by African Americans in the United States.
Thank you for that.
Now, we can talk about Trump and all this money, but everything he got was given to him.
Isn't that a fact? There's no question about it. And Dr. Demery, jump in here too, because, you know, there's something to be said about money that has been obtained through nefarious means, you know? And I don't know, there's a saying that says, a fool and his money will soon part. And we kind of see that happening to him right now with all of these lawsuits. I mean, there's so many lawsuits, you know, that is absolutely incredible. But going back to you, Danny, thank you so much for that, because Second Street is probably about 7 minutes from where I am, where the studio is right now. Okay. And so many people don't know the history, our history. And we're definitely going to get back to that next week. And any other positive stories, you can jump in and just tell them about it tonight, because I still want to cover a lot of this. And so we'll understand what's going on, just like we covered critical race theory. And there were some painful things that were disclosed during those 4 weeks that we did CRT. But also last week we did, well, and the program I thoroughly enjoyed and our audience did too. And that was something very positive. And that was, black inventors that changed the world. And the importance there is that we need parents out there, if you're listening, and we're going to go back to this next week as well. Black historians, black people, role models, and people that have done some things that you have never heard because they don't teach it in school. But we want to bring it to you right here. You know, I think, and I always know, I remember, in high school, and I went to an all black high school. I went to all black middle school, what it was called, junior high then. I went to all black elementary school. And I remember being in high school, and I'm a freshman. And one highlight of my experience there was when Arthur Ashe came to our campus, and from UCLA. And man, I can remember being so proud of him and him, and he had his entourage from UCLA, part of the tennis team, and I think the coach and that nature. And I remember they had on the light blue blazers. And I was so proud of that. Arthur Ashe. Well, see, he went to Maggie Walker High School also. Then he went to UCLA. And he went on to be an amazing tennis championship. You know, he broke through that barrier. And he died at too early of an age, because through a blood transfusion, he contracted AIDS. And folks, that was through a blood transfusion. So Mark put a line under that. But it was, he was gone, you know, in our opinion, way too soon. But who knows what God had planned, okay? We never know. We never know. And so on that note, Dr. Demery, when we hear things like that, I told you about my Arthur Ashe story, okay? I can tell you about the time when I met Bill Crosby and Sidney Poitier when they came to Virginia Union University. You know, and I was a student there. It was a funny story. I'm not going to get into that. However, I was able to meet them. But I also, in meeting these people, I was inspired. Wow. And, you know, children look up to role models and say, okay, I can be that basketball player. I can be that engineer. I can be that architect. I can be that doctor. I can be that lawyer. I can be that banker. So what Danny was saying, which I really, really love, and we want to interject as much as that as we can throughout all of our programs. You know, we want to talk about the good and the bad and some things that are not so pretty, right? Dr. Demery, we've covered this before. And in your opinion, or maybe you want to talk about maybe some black people that inspired you. Dr. Demery, some black people that inspired you to go on to be successful?
Well, one of the people off the top of my head, I actually met him, actually sat down and had lunch with him, several of us, as Navy chaplains. I got a chance to meet Desmond Tutu. We sat down and had lunch with him, and he inspired me from a spiritual standpoint that you don't have to be great in terms of your ministry, but as long as your ministry is great, that's what makes the difference. So in other words, what he was, you know, my church is a little small church, and it's not the size of the church that matters. As long as God is speaking there and you are being effective in terms of moving the spirit and being a conduit for God's voice to be heard, that's what he said is successful. And that inspired me. So I'm not down, you know, on the fact that my church is small and it's not, you know, big, huge, booming, mega church, because that doesn't necessarily mean success.
It doesn't. That just
got a lot of people that come to your church.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really mean that you're successful or really all that good of a preacher. I mean, I mean, I have to be honest. I mean, old Smiley there in Texas, he's a horrible preacher to me. He's horrible. I mean, he might as well just be, you know, a speaker that you can go down and get an inspirational speaker, you know, off the internet or something, because in terms of preaching, he's horrible. He's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really bothers me that people wage success by how much money you make, what kind of house you have, what kind of jet you ride in. When I ride in the jet, I'm proud to ride coach all the way in the back of the plane. Place to sit on a plane anyways in the back. So, you know, the point being is that, you know, we have to be careful, you know, how we weigh success. And when I met him, he's the one that kind of redefined what success in ministry is.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm going to piggyback off of that, because I believe that wholeheartedly, you know, because you have millions of dollars, Dan, it doesn't mean that you're really successful. That means that you made a whole lot of money. I define success is someone who's done something they wanted to do, and they're very content in it, and they're happy in their own spirit, and they display this with the way they project themselves in life. Hey, you can make $50,000 a year and be successful, because if that's what you want to do and that makes you happy, and you are doing it, and you're honest, and you got whatever you got through honest means. You know, some equate a crook as being successful. Now, he stole everything he got. Is that really success? Okay, he was successfully a crook, but that's not success. To me, is something that you are happy with what you've done, and you did it through means that were of good measure. What's your take, Dan?
You know, evil gotten gain can bring much.
Mm-hmm.
With evil gotten gain comes consequences.
Ooh.
Because every seed will produce after its own kind.
Mm-hmm.
But the choices and investments or gains that you made came from an evil place, you're going to reap an evil harvest at some point in time in your life.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go to talking about success, you want to talk about having good health, a good mind, an open heart, you know, and a heart of flesh, not of stone. And you can be compassionate and loving to others, and you can produce things in communities. You can educate people to really operate on another whole different financial world level.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the churches, I think, should put more emphasis on teaching and training their congregants on how to be intelligent consumers, how to be successful in getting business, finding ways that we can make our own opportunities, and we work in the spirit of unity.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think that the churches could do more than anything, just educating about the Bible. They need educating and understanding of how to make this life's walk where your life counts on this earth, not only to get to heaven, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of things we must understand, and that is further to be implemented into the teachings of a people like us.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not sure whether you attended this workshop. I'm going to just call it a workshop, Dr. Demery, that you and I were a part of. And I was part of the organizing committee that put this on. And you remember, what year was that, Dr. Demery? Was that 2016, 17? We were at New Hope, huh?
Yeah, uh-huh.
And Danny, we had a career day for our scholars, young scholars. Basically, it was for them at New Hope Missionary Baptist Church, and we had 24 different, professionals from different professionals. We had an engineer there. We had people from the military. We had people, doctors. We had lawyers there. We had educators, people throughout the medical communities there. I can't. Can you think of anybody else, Dr. Demery? But there were about 24 administrators and people that I was proud to be on the dais with. I was proud to be there. Because these, and then we had several young people there, and I was amazed at the turnout. I was amazed at the professionals that took their time to participate in this. And I'm saying this is a wonderful thing. Dr. Demery and I, we were there, and it was just a wonderful thing. And so, Danny, I couldn't agree with you more that our churches need to do more. Can you imagine? I don't know how many churches there are in the United States, but there are tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of churches throughout the United States. It's just about every town. Small towns have a church, and your bigger towns and your cities have churches. And you take a city like Los Angeles. Good Lord, how many churches in Los Angeles? How about New York, Chicago? I mean, just all around the country, there are hundreds of thousands of churches. I don't know how many there are. Do you have any idea how many churches there are in the United States, Dr. Demery?
No, I don't. I know there's probably some record somewhere that would give a really close estimate, but I can't begin to imagine what it would be off the top of my head.
Okay, well, think about this. Let's say there are 1 million churches in the United States. I don't think that's too far off. I don't know. I don't have that number in front of me. And you multiply that by, let's take an average number of, let's say, 50 people. I don't think that's too far to reach, or 100 or 200 people. We're talking about, can you imagine if those churches would take an active role in the type of program that you and I participated in back at New Hope? Can you imagine, Danny, if these churches would take an active role of not only preaching on Sundays and having the choir get up and sing, and oh man, and then they go home until next Sunday with no active or community work to follow up on? Can you imagine what would happen to this world if the churches did get more involved in the education and opportunities and information? Because in the beginning, when we first came over and there were churches and things of that nature, the church was a major source of information, wasn't it?
Uh-huh.
And education.
I guarantee you, I can't imagine what it would look like. I can't imagine that through the knowledge that could be obtained and given and disseminated
bless you
throughout the churches, that knowledge is power.
Mm-hmm.
And that power is gain, and then people can find financial independence, they can find financial freedom, and they can find resources and some more of the William Breath, William Brown Washington banks should be established today. We have a lot of capital out there, but we have very little unity. And when we have banks that are going to cater to people of color in a proper way, in a fair way, and in a systematic way where they don't put them under thumb you know, and putting them in trick bags, putting them in little catchphrases, and that's been controlled by venture capitalists with billions and billions of dollars that but take advantage of those who try to get into the entrepreneurial position for their own ideas.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I can't imagine what it'll do. I think that knowledge will bring power to the community, to the church, and more.
I know you're right about that. I remember, and also in New Hope, there's a ministry, and a lot of churches, I guess, have this, and it's layman ministry. And we have, at New Hope, there's a retreat each and every year. And it's a men's boys retreat. And it's geared towards our youth, where they go up for about a weekend and they are taught skills. They are taught, the Bible. They are taught, how to be young men, which I think is a fabulous, fabulous program. And so, we need to start taking care of our youth. I recall, being a mentor to a young man by that, I'm sure his family, and he will not mind me calling his name, Caleb Gill. And, I was his mentor, and it was so fascinating and enlightening for me to be able to share some of my knowledge with him. And you guys know that I'm a financial advisor. I'm a former stockbroker, trained on Wall Street. And he learned a lot from me. I used to teach him some things about the stock market, you know. As a matter of fact, I used to go around to the schools, some of the middle schools and even high schools in Southern California, and talk to the students about how the stock market works. I would teach them about the Dow Jones. I would teach them about the various indices that's available. And see, these are things that our communities, the children aren't taught these things. And and what was very, very satisfying to me is that Caleb, he said, "Oh, Mr. Brown, that's fascinating. Okay, how do I do this? How do I do that? I think I'm interested in that." You know? And so that was rewarding to me, Dr. Demery, to have this young man being interested in something that I introduced to him, you see. And I enjoy doing it. When I go, I remember going to a middle school once, and I was teaching them about what is the Dow Jones. I taught them about the Dow Jones 30, and we played a little game. And I gave them information about what it was, the companies that were involved, and the symbols of these particular companies, Danny. I gave them the symbols, right? And then we came around and had a little quiz, and I took 30 gold dollar coins with me, 30. I went to the bank early that morning, and I got 30 to represent the Dow Jones 30. And if they got the answers right, they would get a gold coin. They were so proud of that gold coin, Danny and Dr. Demery. It was so cool, and I was so pleased that they remembered and they got that. And I'm telling you, they used to have, the teachers would have the children to write me a letter on their experience with my visit. And that was so satisfying and gratifying to me that, I made whatever impact I did, in a positive way to these young scholars, you see. And these are the types of things that we can do in our church, because let's take all three of us went to New Hope, right? And we attended New Hope, and were members there. Look at the various professionals there at New Hope Missionary Baptist Church. You two know, along with me, there is a cross section of just about, you pick a vocation or a profession or a career. I think, and New Hope is very well represented in professionals there, right? And can you imagine, let's say we volunteered our time, Danny, and we did this, and everybody doesn't have to show up at the same time. But say you can have a committee. And so this Saturday, there is going to be a science teacher, there's going to be a math teacher, there's going to be an English teacher on board. There's also going to be someone to talk about computer skills. All right? And we can volunteer with all, you take all of the people that belongs to New Hope Baptist Church and other churches out there, we could take 3 or 4 professionals a week. Okay. I could volunteer 1 hour a month. Okay. And then we rotate, have different professionals coming in, teaching math and science and English skills, how to write properly. Do you know very few children right now know anything about cursive writing? Did you guys know that?
Yeah.
Very few children know about how to write cursively, or cursive writing skills, you know? Look at, how about, speaking properly? Okay. Is that taught effectively, in our schools? Now, let's take these same young people. Now they graduated from high school and they chose not to go to college, but now they're going out and they want to find a career for themselves. Okay. I think it's important, Danny, if you're going on an interview, to be able to speak properly.
That's true. There's a proper way to do that, and giving accolades to the men and boys retreat there at New Hope. That is a good foundational thing that's been going on for a minute. But in order, you know, 1 weekend a year ain't nearly close to being enough.
Yeah, yeah.
What I'm speaking to is something more deeper and more precise and incisive than just a weekend retreat, not taking away from that.
Right.
But these etiquettes of how to interview, how to write up a resume, how to present yourself, how to market yourself needs to be taught also. So it ain't going to happen in a weekend.
No. I agree.
So that has to be part of the church curricula, and it has to be set up in a proper way, and that's the ands and buts of it that I can see.
You know, I think you're exactly right. That's why I say that the church has an ongoing program where each weekend you have volunteers to come in and teach some of these skills, like reading, writing.
That's the only way it needs to be set up, William. I think it needs to be a curricular where they can be as intense as needed,
mm-hmm,
or whatever level you're getting to, you know what I mean? And just having people come in to speak on the weekend, all that's good. But what I'm talking about is a little bit deeper and more in depth.
Well, you get no argument or anything contrary to what you just said. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Yes,
I definitely do, sir. It's no question about it. Mm-hmm. We just need to do a better job. And so, any of you preachers out there, you know, please pay attention to what we're saying. You might want to take heed to it, because I tell you something else. Churches now, think about pre-COVID, think about the attendance in church over the last 4 or 5 years. I remember when I first attended New Hope back in 2003. That's when I first joined. You go in on 9:30, you could not get a seat in the sanctuary.
That's true.
Could not. As a matter of fact, I remember Bobby had to come back and line up those red chairs on the side of the pews, right? And then on top of that, you had an overflow room that was practically full. Because before I joined the choir, I was late often, right? And I couldn't get a seat in, help me Lord, in the sanctuary. And I had to go to the overflow room. But now you can find a seat anywhere. And I'm talking about pre-COVID. Pre-2020, you could find a seat everywhere. And so that should tell the preachers there, you need to do more. You need to do more, bring awareness and education and information, knowledge that your congregation needs. So folks, this is what we're going to do. Hope Facebook doesn't get crazy. I'm going to play a couple of songs by our very own brother, Tisdale, because I think this one right here really kind of sums it up a little bit. This is Freeze Someday. All right, gentlemen, if you want to kick back, you can mute your, stop your cameras if you want to do that, if you want to just sit back and enjoy it, okay?
Beings of heaven, as I go. Through this wilderness, down here below, guide my feet in peaceful way, turn my midnight into day.
For a prize,
for a prize.
Oh. My soul spoke for a price. Only he could pay such a price. When he came and saved me, he did not walk away. Now I'm here to tell you what it's all about, yeah. Jesus, he's my Savior. There is no doubt. Then you can hear that good news about Calvary. Oh, yeah. He is the Savior. He died for me, oh yeah, and my soul was born, oh, fall for a price. Only he could pay the price.
Love you've given me. sometimes more than I could see. Softly calling,
softly late calling
at night,
late at night,
everything will be alright.
You catch me when I fall.
Oh yeah. When I'm falling, yeah,
everything's
gonna be
alright.
I hear you calling late at night. To do, yeah. You catch me when I'm falling. I know every little thing gonna be alright. Days when life just didn't seem fair. Then there were days when things went right. I've had days when the clouds made it dark outside. Then there were days when I saw the light. My childlike faith, but not childish way, take me back to that place again. Simpler time, when through the eyes of innocence, I see the way it was back when. Heaven sang.
What happened to the good old day when we used to like to run and play and stay outside till the street lights came on?
Till those street lights came on.
Will we ever have it that way?
Listen, those days when I didn't think I could make it, you came like an eagle and protected me, took me to a higher place, high above it all. I was looking down on my problems, they didn't look that big no more.
What happened to the good of
what happened?
We used to like to run and play.
We were running
outside till the street lights came on.
I played till the street lights came on.
Will we ever have it that way?
Can we have it that way again? That's my mom.
And come smoke episodes.
Oh, what happened
to the good of day?
What happened?
We used to like to run and play.
We stayed outside till the street lights came on.
Will we ever have it that way?
Have it that way, yeah.
It's my mama and comes for episodes. Yeah.
But listen, I can't quit, Lord. I won't quit, Lord. I'm holding on to your promises, promises. This is it, Lord. Still strong, no matter what comes my way, I'm gonna hold, hold on, hold on. I'm gonna keep on running and playing till the street light came on.
Will we ever have it that way?
Have it that way.
didn't have a worry in the world.
Episodes.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
oh, oh. What happened to the good old days?
Oh, yeah.
We used to like the running late. Oh. It's from the outside till the street lights came on.
Till street lights came
we'll
on.
We'll never have it that way.
Can we turn that way again?
Episode. Yeah.
I tell you, I'm never gonna quit, Lord. I'm gonna keep holding on to your promises.